right, here we go, launching the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with Ed Alexander. Ed and I welcome you to the show today. It's Wednesday. It is May 6, 2015. Hope the week is going pretty darn well for you so far. We're coming to you live from AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We live stream the show at buckmastershow.com. That's my website, and the station's website, kvoi.com. All of our podcasts and the complete show archive of all of our work over the 4+ years that we have been doing this is available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number, 790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation at any time during the noon hour. And our Facebook page, we invite you to join us there as well, and that is Bill Buckmaster. Well, Tucson is poised to become America's downtown rebound poster child of the next generation. So writes Dr. Arthur Nelson of the University of Arizona in an op-ed piece recently in the Arizona Daily Star. Dr. Nelson is Associate Dean for Research and Professor of Planning and Real Estate Development in the College of Architecture, Planning, and Landscape Architecture at the UA. He is also Presidential Professor Emeritus of City and Metropolitan Planning at the University of Utah. For the past 30 years, he's conducted pioneering research in growth management, urban containment, public facility finance, economic development, and metropolitan development patterns. Dr. Nelson with us on the live line. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you, Bill.
Tell me a little bit about some of the reasons for your enthusiasm about downtown Tucson's development.
Well, I've studied downtowns now for about 30 years, both personally and through data collection and analysis. And what I find is that the base demand for downtown residential living is 1% of the metropolitan area population. So for Tucson, that would be about 10,000 people, since the metropolitan area here is about 1 million people. But what I find here is that only about 3,500 people live in what we would call downtown Tucson. So there's an unmet market demand for about 6,000 or so more people right now today. But when a downtown is attractive, which actually I think Tucson is, it can attract up to 2% of the metropolitan population. So there's a lot of upside potential downtown. But one thing that downtown Tucson has going for it, actually two things that many other, maybe most other cities don't, is the proximity of a major university and a streetcar conveniently connecting the university and the medical center even to downtown. So there is a lot of upside, raw market potential for development in downtown. And finally, as we grow to 1.5 million people in the metropolitan area by 2040, 2050, we basically add another increment. So I'm looking at a downtown, minimum downtown residential demand for about 30,000 people by about 2050, which is only 35 years from now.
Dr. Nelson, people like a genuine environment, whether it's historical or just a feel of it that has kind of a feel that it's really a real place, and downtown Tucson meets that, in your opinion, I assume.
Yes, it does. When I first came here and I looked around, I was surprised, well, not surprised, I was very impressed with the amount of preservation that had taken place. The very nice open spaces. There's been a lot of thoughtful design for downtown. Certainly some mistakes have been made, but a lot of downtowns have made those mistakes. I spent a lot of years at Georgia Tech, which is downtown Atlanta, Georgia, and I looked at downtown Atlanta, Georgia 30 years ago, and I said to myself, there's no way people want to live in downtown. Well, now there are something like 30,000 people who live in downtown or near downtown Atlanta, Georgia, and they have nothing going for them. They don't have the kinds of open spaces or historic structures or accessibility to universities as you have here. So, you know, compared to many, many other metropolitan areas, Tucson is really well positioned to attract a new residential development downtown.
And one thing I've noticed, Dr. Nelson, the resurgence of kind of locally owned operations, the restaurants really have kind of led the way in downtown Tucson. Have you discovered that as well?
Well, yes. Actually, restaurants are leading and somewhat lagging indicators. They lead in the sense that when restaurants open, a certain number of people, small number, 1 or 2% of the population, but a certain number of people say, oh, this is making downtown nice. Maybe we should think about living here or living nearby here. But then once people arrive, they generate their own demand. And so what I see is a kind of a synergistic effect where a few restaurants opening attract people. Some of them say this is a nice place to live. They move in downtown. They generate more business, and it kind of cascades. And I want to go on a little tangent. A lot of downtowns have this theory that all they need to do is bring in some big fancy office building or some jobs or something. But I think the economic development policies for downtown in the U.S. are really people-based. Bring the people to live downtown, and they are the economic development generators.
One of our Facebook friends had a two-part question for you. Is there a limit on how large a private development can actually put buy and build on enough land to create a totally privately owned city, including its infrastructure? This Facebook friend was pointing to the Disney World area. I believe it's called a Reedy Creek Improvement District. Your thoughts on that, please?
Well, I know Reedy Creek pretty well. There are a lot of these master planned communities around the country. Of course, they vary widely in their quality. I like to think in terms of the master plan for Reston, Virginia. 40 years ago, when that was planned, actually more like 50 years ago now, it was planned primarily as a residential development bedroom community to downtown D.C. and other employment centers. Well, about 20 years ago or so, they decided to build a new downtown in Reston. So from scratch on parking lots of shopping centers, up came a brand new downtown with a lot of residential and, of course, the office and retail, and the residential was snapped right up. So I think there is a possibility for some of these privately managed, privately run existing developments, we have a lot of those around here, to, on their own, plan ahead for their own little downtowns. And if they do the proper urban design, and we have great urban designers around the country who can do this stuff, if they do the proper urban design, you can generate the market for people who want to live in maybe not a downtown like Tucson, but a downtown in a suburban setting.
All right, let's go back to the live line. Charles would like to make a comment or has a question for Dr. Arthur Nelson of the University of Arizona. I believe it's our friend Charles Heller. Go ahead, Charles.
Thank you, Bill. Dr. Nelson, I appreciate your very informed commentary, and I'd like you to answer this question. Why would we want to stimulate urban overcrowding and the longer wait times and the more pollution that generates from making an area overcrowded, when instead of exceeding the carrying capacity of an area, we can spread the population out where the effects of their behavior, like driving and other things they do, can be more absorbed by the environment as opposed to a concentrated place like a downtown area? Seems to me, and the amount of time it wastes if you have to travel through it, seems to me to be a true offset to any of the benefits. Maybe I'm looking at it wrongfully. I'd like your response. I'll listen on the radio.
Thank you, Charles. Dr.
Well,
Nelson.
This is an interesting question because, for one thing, I'm more about choice than about sort of steering people away from their choices. I think that if a certain number of people want to live downtown and for whatever reason they cannot live downtown, whether it's planning or zoning or impediments, then that shouldn't be the case. But then once we have people downtown, what we also find out is of the people who live downtown who work, some people live downtown and don't work, but of those who live downtown and work, a third of them work downtown, and a third of them work out of their home downtown. And so what we find is that among all of the metropolitan population segments. It's the downtown households that own the fewest automobiles by far per household and have the lowest vehicle miles traveled per household and therefore generate the least amount of greenhouse gases per household and so forth. So, yes, you might have a lot more activity at a certain point, but when you look at the total greenhouse gas generation, VMT generation, from downtown on a per-household, per-person basis, it is far less. It is a fraction of what is done in the suburbs.
All right, finish your thought there.
Go ahead.
I was just going to kind of wrap this up. I've only got another minute or so, but you've traveled extensively for checking out downtowns, not only in this country, but in Canada and around the world. Do you see Tucson kind of lagged behind with its downtown renaissance? Will that pay dividends, in your opinion?
That's an interesting observation. I think, in a way, it will. I think that we are in Tucson maybe a little behind the curve in terms of other metropolitan areas around the country and maybe somewhat around the world. But the downtown didn't have the infrastructure until recently it needed to take advantage of market opportunities. And I think a big factor in that is the streetcar downtown, which, by the way, takes off the roads hundreds of cars per day. So that is actually a physical offset to any congestion that takes place downtown because more people live downtown. Not entirely, but a big share of it. So I think the infrastructure is now finally here. The streetcar is here. And you have demographics going in your favor. As we go forward to the next 30 years or so, there'll be far more households being generated who are not raising children who might not want to live in the suburbs as in the past. And so there's this increasing market demand for some alternative opportunities to live, and some of them, some people, 1%, that's not a big number, will want to choose downtown. And again, I'm about choice. If people want to live downtown, they ought to have the opportunity to live downtown. But again, that's only 1 or 2% of the population. The other 99, 98% ought to have the choice to live where they want to live as well.
Dr. Nelson, thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Bill.
Dr. Arthur Nelson from the University of Arizona, where he is a professor of planning and real estate development in the College of Architecture, Planning, and Landscape Architecture at the UA. Coming up now on 1217, Dr. David Levy, world-renowned comet discoverer, will be next on the live line after this.
Hey, we're at this incredible event put on by who else but Arizona Party Rental. Everybody who's anybody is here, aren't you?
Don Pooley.
You're
Janos Wilder.
I know that face.
Bruce Beach.
Hey there.
Bill Harlow.
Great to see you.
Doug Martin.
I thought I just saw you.
Diana Cannon.
Thanks for coming.
David Sluth.
You look familiar.
Dave Fitzsimmons.
Gosh, it's great to see
Chris
you.
Chris Edwards.
Hey, come on in.
John Fina.
I didn't know you were coming.
Bill Hussey.
You're
Joseph Blair.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill Viner.
You know that face.
Hey, it's Brian Jeffries.
Aren't you?
Jeff Ronstadt.
Hey, this is Ken Flower. You can join the party, too. Go to ArizonaPartyRental.net.
Another business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient. It can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering its promises, completing 149 out of 200 intersection improvements, 48 of 80 pedestrian safety crossings, 108 of 200 bus pullouts, and 226 miles of 500 promised bike lanes. Since the 2006 voter approval of the RTA plan, some 650 projects are completed. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com. Well, 12:21, midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Once a month, we welcome the former Parade Magazine science editor, Dr. David Levy, who is one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, with 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. David is on the live line from his home and observatory in Vail, Arizona. Dr. Levy, I presume.
Yes, and this is Dr. Bill, and it's great to hear your voice today.
How are you today, David?
I'm pretty good. A little bit sad because we lost a very dear friend last week, Lonnie Baker, who had been very ill for a while with congestive heart failure. She finally passed away last week, and so we're still a bit grieving about that. But she had a wonderful, wonderful life and a marvelous husband.
David, I want to talk a little bit about the sharing the sky. You had a very successful star party, right?
Yeah, we did. It turned out to be unexpectedly successful. We changed it this year. We joined up with the Tucson Amateur Astronomy Association. We met at Brandy Fenton Memorial Park. And it turned out we had a great time. It wasn't that clear until the evening, and we got to see the moon and Jupiter, Venus, and lots of stars. It was actually a lot of fun. It's kind of the thing I like to do so much.
Was there a meteor shower that just happened?
Yeah, this morning. The Eta Aquarids. I didn't watch it, Bill, because I was the moon was so bright. It was a bright gibbous moon, almost full. And so I didn't get up to see it. But last week while I was photographing meteors for the Lyrid shower, I picked up a beautiful Eta Aquarid fireball. Now, the meteors from this shower come from Halley's Comet.
Mm.
And so what I got on the film was a little piece of Halley's Comet, which was entering our atmosphere, which was just so wonderful to get.
Well, Hallie will be coming around again.
2061, yes.
Oh, 2061. Okay,
yeah.
Well, something for those who are
very... We'll be around for it, won't we?
Yeah, we'll be around, maybe. Those that are just being born and are very young people can certainly look forward to that. How about some eclipses? We've got some great ones coming up, don't we, David?
Yes, we have a total lunar eclipse at the end of September. And... it's going to be in the middle of the night. It's not going to be before dawn, though, and it's going to be a good one right after the monsoon season ends, so we're hoping it'll be clear, and we're hoping we'll be able to see it. In 2016, there's a total eclipse of the sun in Indonesia, which my wife Wendy and I will probably miss, but 2017, Wendy and I will be going to Madras, Oregon, to see the total eclipse in the United States. And then in 2024, there's a total solar eclipse right over the site of our Adirondack retreat in April in 2024.
Yeah, last month you mentioned the Madras, Oregon location. We had several callers were wondering about, will that area be the best place then to see that eclipse?
It'll be one of the best. We chose it because it's... because the it's way, way out of the monsoon flow,
mm-hmm.
and it's in a very dry area at that time of year. So there's a very good chance that the sky will be clear for it that day. We hope so. I'd like to see one more eclipse.
Hey, big anniversary. 1965, 50 years ago, Gemini 6?
Yeah, it was 50 years ago. I was up one morning to do some studying in high school, and I watched the launch and the spacecraft. The purpose was for it to rendezvous with Gemini 7, which was in the middle of its two-week orbit around the Earth. But the minute that the rocket, the Titan II, lit up, a washer fell out of the fell through the nozzle, and unfortunately, it shut down the rocket. Fortunately, the rocket did not tip over. They were pretty sure it was going to tip over and explode. But the astronaut, Wally Schirra, noticed that the clamps had not separated yet, so the booster was still attached to the launch pad. And so they just waited it out and emptied the tanks. And 3 days later, they tried again, and they did it. It was a success.
Wow, I had not heard that story. That's
a beautiful story.
Wow, that could have been a total disaster, to say the least, right?
It would have been the first major NASA disaster.
Yeah.
And it didn't because they had smart people on top of that rocket.
There you go. How about the quote of the month, Dr. David Levy?
Yeah, Sevilla Martin wrote a beautiful thing called His Eye is on the Sparrow. And so I rewrote it last summer a little bit to My Eye is on the Sky, which I would like to read in memory of my friend Lonnie Baker. Whenever I am tempted, whenever clouds arise, when songs give place to sighing, when hope within me dies, I draw closer to the sky. From care it sets me free. My eye is on the sky, and I know it watches me. My eye is on the sky, and I know it watches me.
Very nice. Dr. David Levy with us once a month. We're honored to have Dr. Levy. And David, what should we be looking for after this beautiful full moon moves off here in another couple of nights? What can we look forward to?
Well, Saturn is not the best thing to see now. It's quite bright. It is in the constellation of Scorpius, and very easy to see with a telescope. Look for the beautiful ring.
Did you say that I will be able to see the Southern Cross on the Big Island of Hawaii when I am fortunate enough to be there next week? What was that?
I could find out for you, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, you said, I think the last time we had I'd brought that up, maybe about 10 degrees above the horizon.
Yeah, it'll be low. It'll be low in the sky, but it'll be up.
All righty. David Levy, always a pleasure, and my very best to your lovely wife, Wendy, your partner in Sharing the Sky, the educational foundation that the two of you created a few years ago, and
Thank
we really
so
appreciate your visits with us. Thanks, David.
Okay, and have a good trip.
Thank you very much. Okay. David Levy with us on The Buckmaster Show as we now push toward 12:29 on this midweek edition of Buckmaster. We've got still to come some very interesting activity for you. We'll speak with author Fernando Prohl talking about Cuba-American relations. Then Dr. Robert Hendricks, our education contributor. Maybe time to take another look at No Child Left Behind. That's next on Buckmaster. Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Thursday on the Buckmaster Show for the monthly showdown featuring Sean McCluskey and David Morales. Plus, we'll talk about that controversial development that is planned for the community of Benson. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, with anywhere in the world live streaming podcasts and show archive on my website. That's buckmastershow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Well, as America continues to move toward normalization of relations with Castro's Cuba, a new book allows readers to revisit that critical historical period of the Castro Revolution, the Bay of Pigs, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and on and on. The book is titled Sugar and Dirt, Memoirs of a Tortoise by first-time author Fernando Prohl, who works as a traffic engineer in the town of Marana. The book is a fictional memoir narrated by a 60-year-old man named F.P. Romero, but the book's storyline is intertwined with some of Fernando's life story, and Fernando Parole joins us now. Fernando, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Bill.
What was the genesis for this book, Fernando? How did this come about? And I understand it was a long time in the making.
Well, I've been very fortunate to have a fairly interesting and eventful youth. So back in my early 20s, I decided to write this book. And I tried to write it at that point, but it was a total failure. So I changed my mind about writing it at that point and said to myself, I will prepare myself to write the book. And unfortunately, it took 40 years.
Your own family, you left Cuba at an early age, at age seven.
Seven. Yeah.
How much of that do you remember, that childhood there in Cuba?
I remember quite a bit of it. We were there through the Castro Revolution in 1959. We were there through the Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. In fact, our home had been sequestered by Castro's military, so we had soldiers living in our house. And the narrator of the book recounts all of that.
A little bit about the plot. This narrator, Mr. Romero, is this kind of a little bit of biographical?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It's autobiographical. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to write a straightforward nonfiction memoir. I thought, first of all, I've been studying for a very long time the art of writing fiction, or trying to teach myself the art of writing fiction. So it gave me an opportunity to be creative, and also gave me some psychological separation from some very difficult things that I needed to remember and tell about.
Tell me a little bit about your family in Cuba.
Let's see. My father, both my parents, I believe, were remarkable people. My father was graduated from the University of Havana. He originally came from Spain, mm-hmm. in the 40s, and he graduated from the University of Havana, was an attorney, was a businessman. He owned Esso gas stations, if you remember Esso.
I do remember Esso, yeah.
Esso gas stations. Mm-hmm. He owned a restaurant. He was president of a bank. And my mother was one of the first female attorneys in Cuba, and she was one of the first women on the Cuban Supreme Court.
Wow.
And so, yeah, they were remarkable people.
Did the family barely get out of Cuba?
We were fortunate in the sense that since my father was a Spanish citizen at that time, through the assistance of the Spanish embassy, we were allowed to leave, but only the immediate family. And both my father and my cousin, who was living with us at the time, he was originally from Spain too, were arrested prior to our leaving. And my father was released after a few days, but my cousin remained in one of Castro's jails for 7 years.
Tell me a little bit about the title, the significance of the title Sugar and Dirt and Memoirs of a Tortoise.
Okay, Sugar and Dirt. Just coincidentally, when I was writing the book, I was also reading a book by a German author, Alfred Doblin. And in that book that I was reading, he said that life is made up of sugar and dirt. And immediately I knew I had my title for the book. And the part of the memoirs, as far as the Memoirs of a Tortoise, I guess you have to kind of read the book to get all of that. But it's a metaphor for not only sometimes people taking a long time to do something and being patient about it, but also the shell as a metaphor for armor and strength.
What have you learned about first-time writers? I mean, it's been, I'm sure, quite a journey for you.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. First of all, really exciting. I mean, again, I didn't want to write the book. I always knew I had a good story to tell. I just didn't want to write the book until I was I believed that I could tell the story well. But once I started writing, it took about a year and a half, probably about a year and 3 months or so to write the book, and it went fine. I mean, there's quite a few revisions while I was writing.
It's nice artwork on the cover, Sugar and Dirt, Memoirs of a Tortoise. The book is published by Wheatmark.
Wheatmark, they're a local Tucson publisher, and they have been fantastic to work with. Like you said, the cover and the design of the book is incredibly professional, and they've been very, very supportive.
How about your own feelings now as we move toward normalization with Cuba? Are you anxious to return to your native island?
It's a good question. I absolutely have no problem with other people going to Cuba, and I am very optimistic about President Obama's efforts to normalize relationships. I believe that the more the Cuban people have contact with and communications with Americans and other people from other parts of the world, I think the sooner a democratic government will be established in Cuba. To answer your specific question, as far as myself, out of respect for my very courageous and valiant parents who lost everything they owned, we left Cuba without any possessions whatsoever, with no money, and they struggled mightily in Miami, along with a lot of other Cubans when we first got here, especially with the language. It was not a good time for them.
So out of respect for your parents and the tremendous struggle that they had to endure after leaving Cuba, you will not go back until you feel that the democratic process has been fulfilled once again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What would you like the reader to take away from your book, Sugar and Dirt, Fernando?
A good part of the book, outside of the parts about Cuba, et cetera, are about F.P. Romero and his, so to speak, fall from grace at a certain point in his life where he got himself involved in a world of hoodlum violence and drug abuse, et cetera, and he finally liberated himself from that world by meeting a special girl.
Mm-hmm.
And by deciding to educate himself. I think one of the most important themes of the book is self-redemption and self-reinvention. I firmly believe in that.
Have you reinvented yourself many times throughout your life?
Several.
Several times.
Several times, and I'm ready to do it again when I retire in about 2 months.
That's what I was, my next question. You're going to be reinventing yourself. I myself hate the word retirement. I would rather look at the word reinvention. And so you're kind of reinventing yourself again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I look forward to the next chapter.
Are you going to do some more writing?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
How has the book been received so far?
Oh, I've been so fortunate and so blessed with the reception for the book through social media, emails, Facebook comments, comments on Amazon. The reception has been very pleasing. Just people have said some incredibly kind and supportive things about the book. So
yeah,
I'm very happy.
Up on my screen right now, we have actually the Amazon site. And there's been quite a few customer reviews and comments, and very favorable. So I would be very proud, and I'm sure you are, Fernando Parole, about what you've done with this book.
Yes, I am. Thank you so much.
The name of the book is Sugar and Dirt, Memoirs of a Tortoise by Fernando Parole, and the book is available through Amazon, obviously. Any of the local bookstores have it as well?
No, it's Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available in paperback, in Kindle, and in Nook version, and it probably would make a wonderful Mother's Day present.
or any other holiday for that matter. Fernando, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. Really appreciate it.
Fernando Prohl with us, talking about his book, Sugar and Dirt. Coming up now on 1244 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back. Dr. Robert Hendricks, we're going to talk education as we do with him every month right after this.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman on behalf of Five Star Termite and Pest Control. Question, how many cockroaches does it take to change a light bulb? None, if you use Five Star Termite and Pest Control, because there are no cockroaches. Hasta luego. Adios, cucaracha. Do yourself a favor and call my friend Shelby Hawkins at Five Star Termite and Pest Control.
We're Five Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
Another business trip? Why don't you just drive instead of fly?
Well, nobody brings me snacks or drinks in my car. Very seldom do I get to watch a first-run movie or take a nap while driving.
No, seriously. It must be much cheaper to drive.
Not really. I checked out TIA's cost comparison calculator. Flying from Tucson isn't just convenient. It can actually save money.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Regional Transportation Authority has completed more than 650 projects to date, including pedestrian safety crossings, intersection safety improvements, and bus pullouts, plus new sidewalks and bike lanes. The Regional Transportation Authority also funds new signal technology to keep people and goods moving. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garber on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us. How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
David Levy, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Robert Hendricks is with us. Dr. Hendricks is the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. And before we talk with Dr. Hendricks, I want to point out, and gladly so, that this portion of the news and the Buckmaster Show presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where so much is going on, beginning with the Memorial Day Silver City Blues and Bike Festival. And Taj Mahal will headline that 20th year celebration. It is a free Silver City event. It's really one of the biggest blues festivals now in the country that is free. So that's something something you'll certainly want to do. Lots going on this summer in Silver City, just 3 hours east of Tucson. You can find out about the many things to do and great places to stay, like Cottage of Whispering Canyon, by going to their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Robert Hendricks joining us. He is Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education, the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice, and he is the former superintendent of Flowing Wells School District and a one-time Arizona's top school superintendent of the year. And he was sharing with me that he was very interested in our last interview talking with Fernando Prohl about Cuba, because at an early age, Bob Hendricks actually was in Cuba right after Castro came to power. First of all, good to see you, Bob.
Good to see you. Yes, that really brought back some incredible memories. Being 16 years old, part of a work camp experience, helping to restore homes in Cuba after the revolution. And the fires were still smoldering. Just an incredible experience. I don't think my parents would ever had let me go had they realized how intense the situation was. But
yeah, so you were kind of in that shoulder period, really, from after the revolution, and the United States still had relations.
Yes,
with
we lived in the Sierra Madre Mountains outside of Holguin, wow. Cuba, and the jeeps made and soldiers made daily ventures near us, and you know, they were very friendly, but it was still a situation where things were extremely politically intense.
But you did carry away a feeling of an absolutely beautiful, lush island.
Incredible island, incredible people. And I, too, would like to return to Cuba, but I have some of the same feelings that Fernando has. Mm-hmm. That I would want to see things politically normalized before I would return.
Dr. Bob Hendricks, Robert Hendricks with us. We're going to talk now a little bit about education. We've talked with you really quite a bit about No Child Left Behind. This has been around, was it first 2002 or something?
2002. And what's really interesting, and we look back in the current recollection of Congress and how many times they actually have reached accord across parties with bipartisan support. No Child Left Behind was one of those unique moments where Republicans and Democrats came together. The teachers' unions, the professor and the professor at universities, they all supported this idea that we could bring everybody on board and move forward and truly not leave any child behind.
Why did this come about? What was the original mission of No Child Left Behind, and how has it either evolved or devolved from the original intent?
Well, the original intent was, let's put all of our energies, our resources together, pull education up by the bootstraps, and let's make it, you know, let's make our country with a first-class education. Of course, comparing it to some other international entities that already had or perceived to have that kind of a environment. The problem is that the notion of how do we become first-class revolved around the frenzy of testing, which, even though the law has not been reenacted, we have the testing portion with us. In fact, some people jokingly recall that No Child Left Behind should be called No Child Left Untested, because we've tested everybody and everything, and that really was not the whole focus of what NCLB should be. However, that was the part that people latched onto, and they set a goal which was completely unattainable, and they said that by 2014, every child would be able to be proficient in math and reading. You know, and even in 2002, we knew that that was very unrealistic, but we knew that it was something that we should reach for. But when you look at the realities of the situation, really only about half of the students, you know, in 2014 reached that goal. And so we still have 50% of our students not meeting proficiency, and that's a problem. It's a problem when you enact a law that you're not able to follow through on.
790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation about No Child Left Behind. So Congress now, I guess the Senate needs to start rewriting it. Is that, does this reauthorizing this?
Well, it should have been reauthorized in 2007.
Hmm.
And so we've really been battling this for a law that never was reauthorized for 7 years. And so we continue to talk about this, and we continue to wonder, you know, what's really going to come about as a result of this. I think part of the problem, Bill, is that not only did we have these lofty goals, but we had a lot of negotiations, you know, among the states, among teacher unions, among individual school districts, as to, you know, how are we going to enforce it? And so there were waivers, there were student groups that were let out of the obligations, the requirements. And so it really has had, you know, not a lot of meaning. I think there are certain things that have come out of the law that are definitely good. One is the public reporting of test scores and student achievement. Prior to NCLB, that really was not a general notion that we should be reporting a report card of school progress and district progress. And so that's a good thing. After that, it kind of fades away. If you ask me today, and I really was a strong supporter in 2002, and I think probably remained a supporter for 4 or 5 years just in trying to get support for the enactment of it. But today, not so much. I really don't believe that we need this kind of federal legislation where it's going to appear on the books and then we're not really going to see any direct results.
And I certainly think that here, especially in Arizona, the feeling is the federal government is too far away, Dr. Hendricks, to manage schools. And I think there's so many that believe that leaving the governance to teachers, principals, local school districts, and ultimately to the states is the best way to go.
Absolutely. And I agree with you completely. I think that's where the emphasis has to come. There is some degree of federal importance in terms of data collection and reporting across states, and that's a very important and, I think, a viable function for the federal government. But in terms of controlling and dictating what happens at the state level or what happens at the local level under the governance of boards, really should be their local purview and not that of federal government.
How many states ultimately did buy into the concept, do you think, of the 50 states? How many bought into the No Child Left Behind?
Well, they really were obligated. I think early on, there was a great deal of funding that was attached to NCLB. So if you were a public school system getting any kind of federal funding.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very few districts that have the luxury of saying no to federal funding.
So pretty much everybody jumped on board.
Everyone did. Most people did. And the consequences of not doing that, again, have been less and less as waivers have been negotiated. And remember, this only applies to public schools. So in some cases, private schools had a very different standard of accountability as to what they had to do because there were no federal requirements and there were no financial strings attached to it.
I think people just get so tired of hearing this testing, 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 though, and that really turns off parents.
It does. And I would think that looking at the general composition of today's political environment in Congress, it's going to be a very difficult bill to be reauthorized unless it focuses more on the state level of responsibility.
Okay, Dr. Robert Hendricks, thank you very much. Dr. Hendricks, one of our contributors, some 24 contributors to the Buckmaster Show. You can find their bios at buckmastershow.com. Bob Hendricks, hope you have a great month, and we'll talk to you in June.
Sure, Bill, thanks.
The Buckmaster Show wishes to thank Mike Emery and his team at Perfection Auto Works. If you're looking for an outstanding mechanic, well, Mike Emery can certainly take care of you. He is offering, and his team offering, a free 26-point inspection. No questions asked. Just bring your foreign or domestic car in. They'll check it all out for you free of charge. 26-point inspection at Perfection Auto Works. They're located at 1046 North Beverly. That is a Midtown location, one block south of Speedway. And there's more information about Mike and the team and what they do on their fine website, perfectionautoworks.com. Coming up this afternoon, it will be 4 Tucson at 4. Mike Shaw is the host of that locally produced KVOI talk show. And, of course, the producer for that is Ray Allen. Ray does a great job, and so does Ed Alexander, who will be here tomorrow bright and early, 6 o'clock, 6 to 8, with Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe, and then the Daily Double with Chris DeSimone. Then Ed sticks around for the end of his day with me, Bill Buckmaster, at 12:04 for the Buckmaster Show. Till then, have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.